Plummer, Grading and Manufacturing Studios. You're listening to Inside Agriculture on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, Ag News 890 in Thunder, 106.1 in Lisbon and Fargo, North Dakota. While the American Farm Bureau and state affiliates are stepping up their grassroots push for a Senate voluntary GMO food labeling bill, as Senate opponents leave little room for compromise. GMO labeling is becoming one of the most heavily lobbied Farm Bureau causes in recent years, possibly second only to the EPA's Waters of the U.S. rule. Farm Bureau's Andrew Walmsley explains the lobbying push.
Over the past couple of weeks, we've had about 500 Farm Bureau members in town for our advocacy conference. We've been utilizing, obviously, our action alert tools that encompass emails to senators, along with phone calls in the Senate offices, encouraging them to support the Chairman Roberts biotech proposal.
Also, the push includes contact with Democrats and Republicans, who both seem to agree action's needed to block a Vermont labeling law taking effect in July. Several Senate Democrats vow to fight the Republicans' voluntary labeling bill, despite its support by hundreds of farm and food groups. Those lawmakers are calling for mandatory labeling, but many also support the proposal by USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, better known as Mandatory Disclosure. Walmsley says the voluntary bill tasks the Ag Secretary to come up with a standardized label, but purely voluntary.
We've got a real issue on this mandatory label idea because it's not really about right to know. It's about putting what is effectively a skull and crossbone on safe products to get a company to reformulate and take ag innovation off the table. And that's where our issue lies. I think there is middle ground that will be reached here rather soon dealing with disclosure, but mandatory unpacked labeling is dead. That won't get through the Senate and certainly won't get back through the House.
Walmsley says he's optimistic for a compromise between Ag Committee Chair Pat Roberts and the committee's ranking Democrat Debbie Stabenow that tells consumers what's in their food without stigmatizing biotech ingredients. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture on this Friday. While the March USDA World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report didn't really change much, still it seems a shade friendlier than before to University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. He says demand for soybeans is off just a bit, but that the 10 million bushel drop wasn't unexpected. There were a few other changes in the USDA spreadsheets, the University of Illinois agricultural economist noted. He says those were in the worldwide numbers.
If you had to summarize those, you would say they were all slightly positive from a price standpoint. For production, we did see lower estimates of wheat for Australia and India, a slightly smaller forecast of corn production for South Africa. And importantly, I think on the demand side, a 1.5 million ton increase in expected Chinese imports of soybeans this marketing year. You look at all those little changes, and what we did see was modest reductions in the projection of world-ending stocks of corn, soybeans, and wheat compared to what USDA was projecting last month.
What the March WASD didn't show, and that the trade had expected, was an increase in the size of the Brazilian soybean crop. Now, this may still happen, according to Good, but not this month.
It may ultimately, but it didn't show up here. Overall, you'd say really not much negative in this report and some slightly friendly information.
USDA updates the World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report monthly. It tracks domestic and global production of agricultural crops. While consumers around the world want to know more about how their food is grown, often their questions relate to the use of genetically modified organisms. Well, former South Dakota Secretary of Agriculture Larry Gabriel says science is crucial to the acceptance of GMOs.
I have a lot of faith in scientists and science, but we have to make sure that we don't let anything escape out of some of the research plots before it's ready to get out there and it's proven safe. If we do those things, I think the future is very bright for this planet, that we can feed the people for a long, long time. But we can't tie the hands of producers by not allowing them to use proven science. You know, a lot of these people concern me. They're going around and they want to go back to the way things were. but they want to, you know, they want to have all the niceties of life. They want to be able to sit in a real warm office in the daytime and a real cool office in the summertime, and they want to drive their car with air conditioning and so forth and do all these things. Well, there's a cost to those things. It takes energy. And, you know, I wouldn't have any problem going back and living like my grandparents did, but I don't think the average consumer in this country wants to do that.
Really don't think so either. There's more pressure than ever on U.S. farmers to feed a growing global population. Gabriel says he has no concerns about using GMO products to help do that.
It's incredible what scientists can do. And I'm not one that's really concerned about genetically modified products, because really you're taking a one or two gene pair out of a plant that has no health problems and inserting those one or two pair into something like wheat or corn or whatever. Again, I think there has to be safeguards so that people that want to raise genetically modified can, and we don't take away their rights. But on the other hand, somebody that wants to raise organic or what we call natural right now, the way we've been doing it, that their rights aren't diminished. And I always said that what we need is some buffer zones to make sure that if you're doing one thing and I'm doing another thing, that there's a reasonable distance between us so you can go ahead and develop your right. And conversely, I can develop my rights so that we don't infringe or impede each other. And I think reasonable, ordinary people could figure out a way to do that.
Gabriel served as South Dakota Secretary of Agriculture from 2000 to 2007. Since then, he's been working on his family ranch near Quinn, South Dakota. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Before we took the break, Darcy Better, Chief Agriculture Negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, says the Trans-Pacific Partnership includes every agricultural product in this 12-country trade deal.
So for agriculture, this is really a win across product segments, fresh fruits and vegetables, suppliers of commodities and grains and basic ingredients.
With America's producers already committed to safe farming practices, Ambassador Better says the trade deal will export the American way of doing business while putting in place key rules regarding transparency.
And frankly, the United States won't have to change much to enter in for TPP to enter into force. Other countries will be raising their standards to meet the way that we are comfortable doing business. And so we have an opportunity both, again, to level that playing field with other countries, but also to create a new way of doing business throughout the Asia Pacific that reflects our standards and our values.
In addition to enforcing key sanitary and food quality measures across countries, TPP will also benefit farmers and ranchers across the country.
Farm Bureau has done excellent analysis about the fact that TPP will raise the prices of key commodities. That's more money in every farmer's pocket.
Darcy Better, Chief Agriculture Negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative's Office. Well, a report by the University of Missouri predicts more pressure on farm finances over the next several years. The university released the Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute baseline report yesterday. The report says lower commodity prices have produced a sharp decline in net farm income, and continued pressure is likely. Net farm income in 2015 was less than half the 2013 record level, as farm receipts declined more rapidly than cost. Projected 2016 net farm income of $56 billion is near the 2015 level. The report says modest increases projected for later years leave inflation-adjusted net farm income at about the same level in 2025 as it was last year. The report also says if interest rates increased as forecast, there will be more pressure on farm real estate values. Well, as we wrap up what's going on inside agriculture, recent data shows farming is one of the deadliest occupations in the United States. Matt Kaper, the National Farm Medicine Center, stresses safety on the farm. He says over the last few years, agriculture workers were the most likely to be fatally injured on the job.
Well, these last couple of years, it's been the most deadly job in the United States. Forestry, farming, and fishing, it does include all three of those things, has a mortality rate of about 20 per 100,000 to 22 per 100,000, depending on the year. That's higher than any other profession in the United States, and higher overall than the average death rate in occupations in the United States, which is about 3.5 per 100,000.
to make the farm safer, he explains steps you need to take.
We have to get to an understanding, particularly with children, that they're not just little adults. They're not miniature adults that can do the same thing that an adult can do. And parents have to deal with their kids in a way, understanding very clearly what their kids are capable of doing and what they can do safely. And I think they have to give a lot of thought to that. With adults, ropping tractors would go a long way in terms of reducing deaths. We have about 130 deaths a year from rollovers on tractors. And if you put a rop on a tractor with a seatbelt, it's 99% sure that you're not going to die when that tractor rolls. There's a variety of other things which take a little bit more intense consideration, like electrical hazards, which are pretty common on farms. Animal hazards, of course, are pretty common on farms. And particularly training naive workers, new workers who have come on, animal handling techniques.
Keeper says there are some new safety concerns over the last few years when it comes to equipment. One of those is skid steer safety.
Skid steers are incredibly versatile machines, but they move fast. And sometimes visibility from particularly some of the older models is very limited, particularly out the back. And oftentimes you're carrying things on the front that might obstruct your forward visibility as well. You might be carrying a big round bale or a big square bale, and that may limit your ability to see what's in front of you. And particularly with kids or people not paying attention, they can get in front of the vehicle and get run over, or you just might back up over somebody without seeing them there.
Keeper says falls from bunker silos are another growing concern.
You know, some of those silos can be packed up to 20 feet high, and inevitably somebody has to go up and pull the tarp back, pull the tires off it to expose the silage so that it can be mobilized to give it to the animals. And somebody standing on the edge of a relatively fragile structure that can collapse and they can fall and get hurt. And right now there is not very effective restraint systems available for people on bunker silos. Bunker silos aren't built with restraint systems, and we don't have a good system right now that we can suggest, unfortunately. That's actually being worked on right now.
Finally, he says ATVs are one of the biggest safety concerns when it comes to the farm.
They're very fast, they're very powerful, and inevitably, kids want to ride them because they're so much fun. You know, they're a great work tool, just like skid steers. They're very effective for what they can be used for, but they're tipsy, and they're oftentimes very powerful, and they can go very fast. And it's very hard to wrap those things very well, to put a rollover protection structure on those. Always, I think it's better to use the multi-use vehicles that have a cab on them, because those can be pretty protected. And if you roll those, you're just not going to get hurt like you will on an ATV.
Matt Keeper, the National Farm Medicine Center. Well, there you have it. Inside Agriculture on this Friday, going to be a beautiful weekend. Temperatures expected to be in the upper 60s to around 70. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.